It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Coming up on episode number 117 of Sports Day Plus. In mere seconds, I'm spending the hour with Kevin Dunn discussing everything from college football to Old Austin, the WNBA, baseball, and perhaps the most underrated pizza place in town. I am your host, Trey Elling. Give me a follow on Twitter at Courtesy Wave and do the same for ESPN Austin at 1027 ESPN. I am pleased to be joined now by my best friend. He has made it a point to join me on Tuesdays for the entire hour here on Sports Day Plus. It is the great Kevin Dunn. What's up, KD? How you doing today?
I'm doing well. I would definitely consider you a best friend, too, and my best friend when you go singular. But the whole BFF deal that's come across the last 10 years is kind of weird as adults. Like, if you're past the age of 12 ranking your friends, it's just, you know, you and I are best of friends. Malik and I are. I wouldn't want to rank y'all. Yeah, though you'd probably get one.
Well, look, it depends. If we're doing a fight to the death, then I'm probably going to be able to take Malik out, not just because I feel like I'm in better shape, but I'm willing to do what it takes to win that competition.
No, Malik's too sweet of a guy.
Yeah. No, Malik will be like, no, you can have the top spot. I don't want to fight you. I'm a pacifist.
Right, exactly. No, but you are one of my best friends. I think you're the best interviewer I've ever heard, certainly in Austin, probably nationally. So I love talking with you. I love chopping it up. And it's good for me with what I'm doing now. It kind of gives me a break during the day to just let it go, you know?
If you don't mind, I'd like you to tell people, remind people what you're doing right now. Give a little bit of free love to Lone Star, a company that I am a big fan of for a variety of reasons and also a customer with right now.
So I've always been fascinated with real estate, and I did some financial stuff and did well with it. But I realized, you know, this is not what I really want to do. So this is a company who I invested with and really trusted them. And so we do multifamily, BTR, acquisitions, kind of a lot of different stuff. So I was fascinated with the project, but also the company. And so just got a really good deal. So yeah, we've got a lot of different stuff out. If you want to get in touch with me on LinkedIn or Gmail or whatever, you can get in touch with me. But it's been a lot of fun. I mean, I think real estate is a lot like certain things in the economy that really tell you about life and kind of where everything's going at that point, you know,
fascinates. Yeah, you can also reach out to Kevin via Twitter on his DMs at KevinDunn01. And boy, real estate looks a little bit better when it's sunny outside. And thank God we finally got a sunny day in this town for what feels like the first time in, I don't know, a month plus. It was feeling downright great Northwest in this city over the last few weeks, and embarrassing admission time. I used to make fun of people who claimed that they suffered from something called seasonal affective disorder, or SAD. But after living in Chicago in the dead of winter, drink up, where it's not only cold but also sunless for months on end, and going through extended stretches like that here or anywhere else, I kind of do start to understand the whole concept of when the sun's not out, it does have an overall effect on your mood. That's why it was great to just be outside for a little bit today.
Yeah, it does. I mean, anytime I've had depression, the biggest thing is open the windows right away, get sunlight in there. Yeah, I mean, I do kind of get that. I mean, I was at a spot where I'd been working so much where I needed like 2 weekends of just sleeping and hanging out and doing nothing. So it kind of fit my own personal schedule in terms of these 2 weekends, I need to relax, get sleep, R&R, get prepared for the week. And so it kind of worked out well. But I know what you're saying. I think there is something to that. I mean, I probably got that in New York, but I also like cold, dreary weather. So that probably says a lot about my personality.
You do like the dreary weather, but for me, it may be as simple as just the vitamin D synthesis that's not happening when I'm not getting exposed to the sunshine. And I haven't gotten tested in the last month for vitamin D levels or for anything else, I guess, for that matter.
But I would I mean, what's going on at home?
But I wouldn't be surprised if my vitamin D levels had sunk, because I'm usually pretty good about supplementation. I haven't been supplementing regularly. And so I actually started supplementing within the last couple of days, and, you know, perhaps it's placebo effect, but I was starting to feel an increase in mood from there. But now that the sun is out, and it looks like, other than maybe here in a couple of days when we do get some rain, we're starting to turn that corner now to summer, where we get a lot less precipitation and a whole lot more sun, to the point that we're all pretty sick and tired of it by mid-July.
Yeah, I don't want to turn that corner like Rocket Ismail against Tennessee in 1990 on the jet sweep. I don't want to turn that corner as quickly as you do.
Hold on.
It was 95 the other day, and I know you loved it, and all I thought was, she got here quicker than I thought.
I am actually on your side on this one, because you labor through the extended summers for the very pleasant springs and falls. And it feels like, I don't know, three of the last four springs, we've been denied those nice springs. The weather hasn't been all that good. It either got really hot way too fast a few years ago, or it was very rainy for the entirety of spring. And then it just gets 90s to 100s very soon after that. So I would like a little bit more of a spring before we round the corner to mid to upper 90s the rest of the way. But according to the near-term weather forecast, which, yes, take that with a very large grain of salt. They are called weather guessers for a reason, after all. But if we are about to be in the 90s for the next...
By the way, dubbed by you.
Yeah, well, dubbed by me, and plenty of people have taken to it. I had somebody the other day ask me, one of the guys in the volleyball group that I'm a part of. They're like, man, weather guessers is such a mouthful. Like, is there a better term for that? Is there a shorter term for that? I'm like, yeah, guessers. You can just call them guessers, but you say it with some animosity, and then everybody pretty quickly realizes what you're talking about when you're like, yeah, the guessers sure missed on that rain all day forecast on Sunday, didn't they? Oh, it ended up raining yesterday afternoon, I don't know, a day late? We're to a point now where we're giving these guys like 48-hour windows to actually get something right?
It's Jimmy the Greek in 88 on CBS telling you why the Packers shouldn't be a 6-plus favorite, or 6-plus, you know? I mean, it's like that. By the way, not jet sweep, because I wasn't around then. It was a toss sweep from Wishbone. Good old Lou, baby. Andy Kelly, 1990. That was a great day for me in college football, because my dad and I watched number one Notre Dame beat Andy Kelly, Carl Pickens, Anthony Morgan, that whole Tony Thompson, that whole Tennessee team with a pretty loaded roster. I mean, Johnny Majors as a coach. And then that night went to Texas Houston, 45-24. Still the loudest I've ever heard that stadium. That place was rocking that night, man.
That was a game that I was not at, but I've heard from you and others about just how wild an environment was. On par with Ricky breaking the rushing record against A&M back in 1998. On par with another Notre Dame game, Notre Dame, Texas. Yeah, Charlie Strong's last year. That was still a very loud stadium. And a couple of other moments like that. It was as good, if not better, considering the stakes in that game.
I was at those games. It was better, but those were close. But it was kind of one of those, I look back on how much I love college football, and I'm like, well, it makes sense. I mean, you were like a young Leo DiCaprio and Jessica Alba and Minka Kelly, you know, you had in one day. And it's like, you know, of course you were into it. You know, I mean, like, to witness all those games in one day in a, 12-hour span was just, I hope it didn't go away with the 12 teams now in and nothing matters till late November.
Yeah, you and I may get to talk about that a little bit later on, because the NCAA and college sports are trying to settle these antitrust lawsuits that are going to require the Power 5 schools to pay a significant amount annually for a decade. That may come up on the other side. Coming up next, it is more sports talk and more. And yeah, we're going to have to talk a little old Austin because a former restaurant institution shut one of its final two locations last week. We'll talk about that and more. I'm joined by Kevin Dunn for the entire hour here on Sports Day Plus.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling. It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Back with Kevin Dunn here on Sports Day Plus. I am Trey Elling, joining you here on 102.7 ESPN from 6 to 7 Monday through Friday. Always a pleasure talking with my guy KD. Yeah, we get into a lot of non-sports stuff, which is pretty standard for this hour. We will occasionally talk sports too, though. You heard a little bit of college football talk last segment, as a matter of fact, and we're actually going to continue that right now, Kevin, because the opening lines for a number of big college football games came out earlier today for the upcoming 2024 season. And as you can imagine, because Texas does play some big games this year at Michigan, the Red River Shootout each and every year, then yeah, hosting Georgia the week after that, they do find themselves on this slate of games with odds even at this point in the spring. Any guesses, and I'm assuming that you haven't looked at this list just yet, any guesses on where the Texas-Michigan line is week two of the college football season in Ann Arbor?
I have not. I mean, they got Will Johnson coming back. They've got Mason coming back. They've got some good pieces, but obviously a ton leaving with head coach and Sharon's now. Texas 4.5.
Close. Texas minus 3. That is Saturday, okay. September 7th. By the way, the week one games do include Notre Dame at A&M. And I was a little bit surprised to see the Aggies as 1-point favorites in that game. Does that shock you at all, considering the player turnover, the new coaching staff in place in College Station? And Notre Dame has at least a little bit of more cohesion going on right now, as well as a very talented quarterback replacing Sam Howell with the kid from Duke.
Yeah, and I've not, you know, caught up with Bob Dunn enough or looked at it, but I know Riley from Duke, the quarterback you're talking about, that he's had a knee problem, which he had during the year, and so that kind of got delayed. So I don't know where, you know, that there may be more confusion about how healthy he's going to be, because he's a hell of a quarterback, can really run too. But once again, running with that knee injury, where's he at a year later? So yeah, I am a little surprised. I thought Notre Dame probably be a favorite there. Notre Dame's been obviously a much better program, for 120 years, but certainly the last 10, and been more consistent. You can say what you want about Notre Dame and go for it and have fun when they get in the semifinal, but they're in the semifinal. A&M and Texas haven't been playing around there very often.
No, they haven't. The next time the Longhorns appear on this list of games with lines will be that October 12th Saturday, Texas versus Oklahoma in Dallas, the Red River Shootout. And as you can imagine, the Longhorns are going to be heavy favorites in that one as of right now. Things can change after they play the first month's worth of games. But I think, generally speaking, we feel better about where Texas is heading into SEC play than what's going on with Oklahoma. Now, they're doing an okay job recruiting, but I'm still not sold that Brent Venables is the guy. The Longhorns are 8.5-point favorites heading into that game in Dallas, at least as it stands in mid-May. I'd probably take Oklahoma there just because in rivalry games, anytime there's more than a touchdown favorite, it does feel like the opposition is able to keep it closer than that, if not pull off the outright upset, which is what happened in Dallas last year with Oklahoma winning that game.
Yeah, I mean, in the majority of our life, 89 was my first OU game. That was Johnny Walker in 28-24, and they were sixth in the country, and Texas was unranked. 90-14-13, OU was the favorite. I mean, I've been to that game a ton of times, and I hate being the favorite. So I totally get what you're saying. You know, Venables is somewhere in between Barry Switzer and Bob Stoops. And then on the back end, Gary Gibbs and Howard Schnellenberger. I'm not John Blake's at the bottom end, but he's somewhere in between there. I don't think he's the right answer for them. And I don't think they're going to have Nebraska type you know, problems that, like a pandemic, if you're selling office space, completely changes the next century of the industry. And Nebraska's had that with football. I don't think they're going to be there, but I think they've got a lot of questions just financially and how they balance, kind of as good as the football program as they've been, which is great, with going to the SEC and the money game that is NIL right now.
Well, I met an OU fan at Hyatt Las Pines when my family was hanging out there last weekend. And one of the first things out of his mouth when he found out I was a Texas fan is, man, I didn't realize how much land the University of Texas owns across the state and then across the country as well. You're like the third biggest landowner in the country. And I'm like, oh yeah, after who? Just asking him, because I know where this is coming from. It's coming from OU message boards. And that's not to say that there is not some truth to that, but it just goes to show how worried OU is that they are going to fall behind the Joneses, when it is most important to keep with those times right now, considering how much more competitive things are about to get. He didn't have a good guess. My guess, if Texas is the third biggest landowner in the U.S., would be after the Catholic Church, and then, I don't know, Bill Gates maybe? I don't know who number two would be.
Yeah, by Catholic Church, you probably mean Notre Dame, right? I have no idea. I do know that UT has done a great job nationally, obviously, with the oil profits they had for a century there, and the whole system, what they had of really, you know, growing that. And I also know that it's funny, like if you go to West Campus now is so funny if you're on the drag and you see all these high level, you know, almost like condos you'd see in a nice area somewhere. And those are all owned by, like, UT owns golf courses. UT owns a lot of land in Austin. They were very smart. But Goldman Sachs owns about a third of West Campus. How funny is that?
Oh, really? Yeah, I guess that's not all that surprising.
Yeah, so I had a buddy at Goldman Sachs. He's like, we own about a third of this area. Like, you own towers? Why would you own towers? And he's like, nah, we're Goldman Sachs for a reason.
So OU is replacing their offensive coordinator, or did replace their offensive coordinator this offseason, with Jeff Lebby moving on to, where is he now? Ole Miss, maybe? I forget where he went, but Seth Luttrell, the former North Texas head coach, is now the OC there.
Yeah.
Joe John Finley is supposed to be helping out in that capacity as well. Do you have any predictions or thoughts on Seth Luttrell taking over play calling duties?
Can we get DeMarcus Granger to serve fries? Are we going all Nepo babies here?
What is Luttrell's connection to things?
Luttrell played at OU, dude. He was a fullback H-back. Like everyone you said, Joe John Finley, that's why I said DeMarcus Granger. Like everyone played at OU.
I remember Joe John. I'd forgotten Luttrell played there, though, as a fullback,
Luttrell,
too.
Number 35, I believe, fullback, H-back, pretty good player.
Yeah, and apparently he has been influenced by a number of former OU guys as well. Mike Leach, Mark Mangino, Kevin Wilson, Larry Fedora. Seth Luttrell calls all of them influences on how he likes to call an offense. So if that's the company that he's keeping, then maybe OU fans have reasons for cautious optimism right now, including having a former five-star step in as a starting cornerback with Jackson Arnold, with General Booty, sadly, now taking his talent someplace else outside of Norman.
And look, Seth Luttrell seems like a good coach, but it does seem like whenever you get to a spot in your program, and I'm thinking about the three major programs I followed, football, basketball, baseball, my whole life, when you get to a point where there's that much, and I say nepotism, it's not family, but it's family within, you know, your OC and your DC played here, and so did your defensive line coach. And so sometimes those are great hires, but you got to be careful. So, I mean, Oscar Giles was a good coach here. Major was a good coach here. But you've got to be careful, like, just hiring guys who are within your program. And that was kind of my point.
Yeah, you're right about that. No, you may also have an issue with getting rid of Brent Venables, because by all accounts, Venables is a really good dude and well-liked. and the results haven't been there through the first couple of years. So ultimately,
I've heard that. Like, he's a really good Christian man and is a good person.
Yeah, a good person. But at the end of the day, if you're not winning football games, even if you are looked at as a good dude by the people in Norman, they're going to have a very short amount of patience when it's all said and done. If they have another middling campaign this year, then his seat is officially hot, well, if not finding his way out altogether. And if he has two mediocre seasons in the row, they're going to have no choice but to make that change, because otherwise they're going to run the risk of getting caught in that cycle that, gosh, Texas, Tennessee, I mean, name so many big time programs over the years who just have a hard time finding that right guy and not making the change when they need to, once they realize that somebody doesn't necessarily have the chops to be a head coach.
And I think OU's been much better than Texas at that in my lifetime. Getting rid of Gibbs, getting rid of Blake, getting rid of Schnellenberger. And they do it, they rip the Band-Aid off a lot quicker. The only problem they have with the Venables deal is, one, he's been a great DC at Clemson, was thrown under the bus with the whole Mike Stoops, you know, is it who's going on? Well, that clearly was Mike Stoops, not Venables, who went to Clemson.
It was the caged gorilla who couldn't be left alone in a coordinator's booth, because otherwise he would destroy it.
Exactly. But the biggest problem that OU has is that 81% of their fan base still watches He-Man, and they think that Venables is Skeletor. Look at the face, people. Look at the face, all right?
Well, I don't remember if Skeletor was ever deep-throating a fire hose trying to take it all in, like Brent admitted that he was at Big 12 Media Days a couple of years ago. But, yeah, we're at a do-or-die time right now for Brent Venables entering year one of SEC play for Oklahoma football. All right, we do have one other Texas game that is a part of these opening lines. That would be Texas hosting Georgia the week after Texas OU. The Bulldogs are slight favorites in that one right now. Coming up, we're going to get away from sports. We're going to talk a little old Austin, including some classic restaurants of past and one place that you need to know about right now here on Sports Day Plus.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling. It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Back with Kevin Dunn here on Sports Day Plus. I am Trey Elling with you every weekday from 6 to 7 p.m. here on 102.7 ESPN. KD, we're talking about this over the weekend. An Austin institution, a restaurant institution, lost another location over the weekend. This is a place that had, gosh, I want to say 4 or 5 different spots around town. They had whittled down to 2 over the last couple of years. And now Trudy's, which used to be one of the more popular places to go around the UT campus, is down to a single location off of Burnett Road and 183 after they decided to shut down their south location. Things change, especially in the restaurant industry, but it is a little bit sad to see a place that I used to go to see if I could get past those 2 shakers of Mexican martinis is now down to that singular location.
I know. We were laughing with Evan last night. There are certain goals you have as a young male in your late teens, early 20s that you laugh at in your 40s, where it's like, I'm going to get laid in every sorority house, right, Evan? And it's like, no. Like, talk about something that would never be a goal I set every day right now, you know. But that was one of those goals back then. It was like, yeah, so we can go to all of them and get the 2-drink minimum. And, you know, I was in a fraternity, and so we had pledges drive us.
Yeah.
And we tried to get through it. And it's like, but also, it's also, even back then at that age, I'm like, I don't want to do this. Like, I'm going to be puking for the next 2 days.
No, I remember. I was trying to think of some of the other places that qualified. Baby Acapulco's was one of those. They had the Purple People Eater margarita that you weren't allowed to have more than 2 of.
Honestly, I took 3 sips of that and was like, I'll never do this test because this is so sugary and disgusting.
Sugary, and I feel like that one had Everclear in it also. So even if you drink one, you stand up, go to the bathroom, and you think you have your wits about you, and all of a sudden you're... legs are jello.
You're on the ground.
Yeah. So that one was especially harsh. I actually like Mexican martinis, so I enjoyed the Trudy's challenge, not because I was trying to drink a third shaker for any reason other than I wanted more of that delicious Mexican martini that they were serving up.
Yeah, no, it was really good. So, I mean, I enjoyed the campus one, living in Hyde Park, even moving back. I met people there and, you know, they were all, good people that were working there and they're making money. And it was a very copacetic situation, but I could tell that structurally the company was not doing well. And they shut down, and they opened up, and they shut down again. And you could just tell they're kind of in a tailspin. So it does suck. I mean, you know, the weird thing about Austin is, especially moving back from New York, I was worried about the food element the most. That the food I had in the 80s and 90s here was not going to be suffice for the stuff I had in New York. And boy, the food got a lot better. And so Austin has changed a bunch. There are a lot bigger D-bags here now and people that are just mean-spirited and really awful people. But that's part of a growing city. And traffic's worse, yes. But, I mean, there's no Uchico or Red Ash or, you know, Dean's or any of that back in the day, dude. It was Dan McCluskey's Steak and Ale and the Stallion. That was it.
Yeah, Hofbräu Steaks on it wasn't even West 6th Street then. I think it was just 6th Street. It was just further down 6th Street from where all the bars were.
It was the same spot with the very garlic Mediterranean dressing on the salad. But there weren't many spots, dude. Like,
no.
I mean, you know, like growing up here in the 80s, as someone who did, there were not a lot. And I grew up in Westlake. There were no restaurants in Westlake. Westlake had the worst food taste of anyone I knew in Austin.
Yeah, that's amusing to think back that was actually the case. And some of the classic spots from our childhoods or when we were in college, they still exist, but they don't exist in Austin proper anymore. They just exist in the suburbs, like Z Tejas. They closed that West 6th Street location. I think the only spots that they have now are like down in Butte, Kyle. They've got one up here by me. I think technically it's more Avery Ranch than it is Cedar Park, but Z Tejas is figuring out a way to still remain. But in order to do so, they had to leave Austin altogether because the competition in a sense was too fierce. And also prices just to have your business in a certain location are much higher than they would have been 15, 20 years ago too, obviously.
So, you know, Derek and Alan, his two sons, and Randy Cohen is Ticket City is one of the best guys you ever meet. Like just a really, really good guy. Mm-hmm. So I met him down in the one in Buda and it is beautiful and the food was great. And I thought, you know, this is probably where I'm going to be living in Taylor soon, brother. That I just don't see the value add of living in downtown Austin with all the issues. And or I'm close to it and not living outside of it with someone who didn't go out a bunch. It's not like I'm downtown all the time,
Yeah, if I were downtown, I would be taking advantage of it probably more than you are. But I also head into the city a lot from Cedar Park. But I also get not wanting to live in the city proper. You can live other places and still have enough access that you can get there when need be and also escape the problems too. It's kind of like being a grandparent versus being a parent. The grandparent can come over, hang out with the kids, or in some cases, the uncle, feed them Doritos and Gatorade and all sorts of junk and then leave at the end of the day for the parents to have to deal with the consequences of those decisions and those presents.
It's why I love being an uncle. I feed your kids with a bunch of stuff. They love Uncle Kevin. It's like Amy's ice cream, Doritos, the pool. Like, this guy's the best.
Yeah.
And y'all have to deal with the consequences at the end of the day.
Yep. We get to deal with the kids that are having a hard time going to bed after that. But you know what? You gotta let other people provide them treats at times when you're going to be the diet Nazi, like I regularly get called in my household.
I will say that there are like different, like, experiences I've had food wise in Austin, being back there for what 12 years probably. Mm-hmm. But I was in New York City in Greenwich Village eating the best food in the world for a long time. And Baldinucci's pizza is the best Roman slice. So that'd be like very close to Via 313 Detroit slice, thicker slice, and the best New York slice I've had by far in Austin.
Wow, they do both. They do the Roman style, and they do like a more traditional New York City style slice.
It's like three family members. They're straight New York. You walk in, they cup your balls. They go, "What are you doing here?" they're very New York. And, you know, my biggest issue with Domino's and Papa John's and back in the day in the 80s when I would order stuff, I go extremely, 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 extremely light sauce.
Yeah.
Very light sauce. All right. And they've got that ratio down perfectly, better than Joe's in Greenwich Village.
Whoa, that's the first place you took me when I visited New York.
I would say the best slice, two best slices I've had in my life were Secret Hidden Pizza in the Cosmopolitan in Vegas. And
what?
Baldinucci's.
The Secret Hidden Pizza?
Yeah.
At where in Vegas?
In the Cosmopolitan Hotel.
Okay.
And that's the best slice I've ever had in my life. Number two is Baldinucci's. Number three is probably Joe's. Number four is probably DeFara in Brooklyn.
Wait, where is Baldinucci's?
It's in Westlake. It's in that Randall Shopping Center. And it used to be a Blockbuster. And of course, I told the guy, this used to be a Blockbuster in the 80s. He's like, all right, old man. Like, you know, I'm glad he was actually a really nice kid. So actually, even the kids there that are working there are really respectful and very cool. But their potato, Roman, Fugini, Roman, and their Bianca and main cheese pizza blew me away. Like, blew me away, man.
You'll have to excuse me. I'm still picturing this area. I know where the Randall's is. Is it near the Jason's Deli?
Which is gone now. It is the Jason's Deli.
Oh, wow. Okay, that's very convenient then. That's easy in, easy out.
Yeah.
All right, you and I need to meet over there. You and I need to meet over there because I am I don't know if I call myself a pizza snob. I've had way too much pizza in my life, so I enjoy a good slice of pie. So you and I are going to have to check that out together.
It hit every box. The cheese, the oil, the crust, the amount of sauce. I was like, you guys nailed this.
All right, let me ask you about the pepperoni. What do they do with the pepperoni? What type of pepperoni is it? Is the pepperoni bowling up, getting crispy on the edges, forming that little grease bowl?
Yeah, what am I, a rube? I'm not ordering with pepperoni.
Rube?
I just don't order with... I haven't had pepperoni on pizza in probably 20 years, man.
Yeah, but you put prosciutto on there.
Yeah, prosciutto is much different than pepperoni, man.
Yeah, it's less spicy. It's not as good on a pizza.
Yeah, but I put prosciutto fresh on the top of the hot pizza. Way different.
And you also call it prosciutto when you order it, so that matters too.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Who's the cool hipster here, all
right? neither of us are the cool hipster is the answer there. He is Kevin Dunn, my bud, joining me for the full hour as he typically does here on Tuesdays on Sports Day Plus. Coming up, we have one more segment that will include talking a little bit of WNBA. That's right. The WNBA is selling sex. And I have just a crazy story from the headlines about some jackass who was the ringleader of a castration club who thankfully is going to prison. That's up next here on Sports Day Plus.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling. It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
final segment with Kevin Dunn here on a Tuesday edition of Sports Day Plus. I am Trey Elling, and you are listening to 1027 ESPN. You can also check us out online at 1027ESPN.com. You can actually hear this entire show commercial-free after the fact by going to 1027ESPN.com, finding the Sports Day Plus show page, and then clicking on the Apple Podcast Media Player. The entire episode will be available shortly after 7 o'clock. KD, one more thing on Austin Pizza before we move on to the WNBA and this grotesque story. I can't wait to try Baldinucci's because I do love pizza. It is one of the two best food vehicles for delicious ingredients, the other being sandwiches. But Austin, and its overall pizza quality has gotten so much better since you were growing up here and since you and I were going to UT in the mid to late 1990s into the early 2000s too. Baldinucci's adds itself to the pantheon that includes places like Home Slice, Via 313, Bufalina is in that category. There's a great spot here in North and Northwest Austin called 600 Degrees. Just like with so many other types of food, this city does it infinitely better than it did two decades ago.
Oh, not even close. I mean, I would say, you know, Home Slice was the best New York slice I had. I didn't know what a good slice of pizza was till I moved to New York with Real World. And so, but Via does everything really well, like kind of the Roman style. With the Detroit style pizza, and the crust is the best.
The Roman style is like a rectangular pizza with that thick crust on the outside, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. So very much like Via.
Yeah.
So the Roman potato at Baldinucci's is unbelievable.
I love a good potato pie. That may be what I have to get when we go there.
Because I had the one at what's our other place we love so much?
Bufalina, the potato pie at Bufalina.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which was great. Like, I mean, Bufalina has the best margarita style, which is more Emilia Romagna in that region of Italy. So, like, they're all different. But, like, the fact we have all these choices, like, you know, if I would have been back here in 1984, back from New York, everything I was doing, I'd be miserable. But I'm a food nerd, and I love the amount of food we have here and kind of the hip quality Austin has nationally, to where a bunch of chefs are moving down here.
Yeah. Yeah, and by the way, the Hot Luck Festival is coming up here in a couple of weekends, which is Aaron Franklin's food festival. There are some big-time chefs from the area, of course, but coming in nationally to hone their craft, to give people taste of just what they're doing elsewhere around the country. And that includes, what did you say the dude's name was? Chris Bianco?
Yeah, Chris Bianco from Phoenix, who literally is the, if there is one big pizza guy in America, it's Chris Bianco, who moved to Phoenix and did so for allergies and so he could breathe. And I get that. And he he's blown away everything. Also, this trait, like, as much as I'm new Austin and new food, I still go to Shoal Creek Saloon, Chinatown, and Austin Lynn and Cattle. And you know that.
Yeah.
So there are still old school spots that are still really good, and I obviously want to support them.
Yeah, I went to Austin Lynn and Cattle for the first time a few weeks ago, as a matter of fact.
Oh, really? I appreciate the call. When'd you go?
It would have been... It was very last minute.
When'd you go?
I'm trying to think. I had to do something downtown. Oh, I know what it was. It was the Roy Wood Jr. show during Moon Tower Comedy Fest that you couldn't make it for because you were at a business meeting at that French restaurant. So I would have invited you, but you already had plans. So there. Oh, man.
Yeah, no, but the Austin, the food scene has changed in a great way, period.
Yeah, for the better, for sure. All right, so I don't watch any WNBA. I don't think you watch a whole lot of WNBA either, but I got to give the WNBA credit for trying to capitalize on a little bit of additional attention with Caitlin Clark and a few others joining the league now that the college basketball season is officially over with and they are professionals. Have you seen some of what's happening with the WNBA as they try and make themselves more relevant in 2024 than they have been for the first 20-plus years of their existence?
I mean, it's a subsidized league, so they make no money and they have a rich uncle paying for them. I saw they half of the teams got chartered flights, which is hilarious. Like, we should get chartered flights. Why? You make no money. Like, if I work for a company and I was making no money for them, like, should I ask for more money?
Yeah, it's basic P&Ls would tell you why they've been flying commercially all the way up till now. By the way, the WNBA launched in 97, so it's closer to 30 than 20 years. My apologies to you, WNBA aficionados, if you were offended by that. I don't really apologize. So they are going to start chartering flights now.
If you're WNBA aficionado, I got news for you. You're offended by everything.
That is a great point. Either that or you're a really old guy who's trying to make up for the lack of relationship that you had with your daughter when she was a kid.
Which
by going
way,
to...
way worse than the 70 pounds overweight lesbian with her partner in Seattle who is like, you know, why does no one go to WNBA games? The dude is way worse.
Oh yeah. Cause that guy's creep / perv in most cases, I would think.
Yeah, no, I mean, pretty much, you know, he's a weird guy who's into arts and reads history and is kind of bright, but not really. And he's just at every party telling you why, you know, it's a shame that the sexism between the NBA and the WNBA. I'm like, dude, this is a business, man. The NBA is propping up the WNBA, literally subsidizing their league for 20 years.
Okay, so I'm glad you mentioned sex. I'm glad you mentioned sexism because the WNBA up to this point hasn't really tried to sell sex as part of an attention grabbing.
Well, have you looked at the product?
I have, and I've thought it's been a good call by them up to this point, but apparently that is changing heading into this WNBA season. And by the way, they're doing a lot of this stuff as they attempt to land that massive TV deal to make some of these expenses, justify some of these expenses. But the WNBA has a campaign going on right now. I don't even know how official it is. It is a league partner this year, but their players have taken to social media wearing a brand called Skims, which are essentially undergarments for women, I guess, panties, and strapless bras and some clothing like that. And WNBA players, yeah, they're professional athletes, so they have nice bodies. Good for them for showing them off with Skims, even if it is going to piss off the extreme of that other side who really doesn't like selling sex as a matter of you trying to get people's general attention with things.
Yeah. So where's the skim going on the lower breast part of it? Is it ripping it off or?
It is. No, it's going much further down than that. We're not talking about a 1980s trucker rally where you're seeing the bottom part of that breast tissue. This is going down and getting really close to that bottom rib. So there is no concern about the under cleavage showing with the Skims, at least the pictures that I'm seeing on social media that were taken of WNBA players. At least in these professional photos, there aren't any under boobs showing from these athletes.
Well, by the way, I want the WNBA to be as successful as any company. Like, I hope they blow up. And Caitlin Clark may do that. But let's get real about business and finances and kind of where we're at with our structure and what's coming in, what's coming out, and all that. And the reality is that they've just lost a ton of money, and there's no way they would have been subsidized without a woke culture saying, you know, hey, we've got to make this work. It's like, well, they're losing, you know, $100 million. And I have no idea where they're at right now. I think Caitlin will help out, and I think that the women's product in college is a lot more – viable and appealing than it was 10, 20 years ago. So I think that will help out. But the other thing too is that half the consumers are women. So like, unless you're like part of like a lesbian faction of like 3% of hardcore people, it's like, well, you should blame the women too. There are a lot of house moms who don't want to go watch the WNBA.
And there's a lot of attempts to strike while the iron is hot going on right now, from the league trying to maximize its TV deal to there are literal sports bars that are trying to open up under the guise that we are only catering to women's sports. There's a group that's trying to do that here in Austin right now. And there's some other examples, I want to say in like Portland or Seattle. I know you're shocked by one of those two locations.
Is that the soccer group, or I'm sorry?
Not exactly. But yeah, so I mean, we'll see if those things work out. I'm not holding my breath that they do. It still feels like a very niche thing. But hey, if it does, then good for them for getting in early on that. All right, that is it for a Tuesday edition of Sports Day Plus. Katie, thank you as always for the time.
Definitely enjoyed it. We'll do it soon.
Yes, we will. Quick programming reminder for tomorrow's show. It is a Wednesday. That means I'll be joined for a couple of segments by Justin Wells of Inside Texas, InsideTexas.com, and the Inside Texas YouTube channel. In the meantime, thank you so much for tuning in to today's show. I will be back tomorrow at 6. In the meantime, have yourselves a great rest of the evening and hook 'em.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elliott.